This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Sporting events, protests, riots, locally, internationally, it seems like something happens in our brains when we get together with a whole bunch of other people. We sort of do things we wouldn't normally do, go with the flow, all this kind of stuff. What happens in that brain of ours, psychologically speaking? That's why we need a psychologist. His name is Mara Steepers. Good morning, sir.
Greetings, Aaron and everyone in Hope Land.
Hello.
And you're 100% correct that when we do enter into a group of people, something about our thinking processes actually change. And it's not just sporting events and riots and protests and things like that, but even in other areas of our life where we enter into a group, the same processes kind of occur. It's so important that a whole actual branch of psychology has been developed called social psychology to actually understand how we are in social situations.
Wow.
So one of the biggest things that happens, and one of the biggest causes of this change of individual thinking and individual processes is a process called de-individuation. So when we get into groups, particularly groups that are larger than our family size, because that's our other group reference, the border between the group and the individual actually starts to disappear, and each member of the group starts to experience a little bit of a loss of identity. And an increase in anonymity. So, you know, they get kind of lost in the crowd in a way. And what that does is actually changes our inhibitions around our behavior. And actually there's a really big diffusion of actual personal responsibility. And so sometimes our own values and morals, we're actually able to transcend those but behave in ways which we wouldn't ordinarily normally do by virtue of the fact that we're a part of this bigger group and we've merged with the group. So the group actually gets a bit of a life force of its own.
Interesting. And obviously this can be positive and negative. And there seems to be, when this de-individualization, all this stuff happens, do we lose some of our moral intelligence or ethical abilities or anything like that? Does that sort of go out of the out as well?
It's an interesting thing. I mean, we don't often lose them. It's just that they get overlooked by virtue of, and this can even occur when it comes to help seeking. So there's a really, really famous thing called the bystander effect, which actually shows that if we encounter, and they've done tests and tests and tests in big cities with this, that the more people who are around when a person needs assistance, the less likely each individual person in that group are to actually assist. Because we all look to the other people around and assume that we don't have the responsibility to actually provide that assistance that someone else will. And actually, the person in a lot of cases actually doesn't get any assistance because everybody thinks that everyone else is going to do it. So we still maintain our own personal sense of ethics and what's right and wrong. But when we get into that group space, we just lose sight of it. The group actually starts to develop its own. The other group process is one called convergence, and that's where the crowd behavior or what actually occurs is actually the result of each individual making up a part of that group. And so this is the best way to understand this is I guess that idea of simmering tension which bubbles underneath the surface and may have been occurring for a long, long time, and then when the group gets together it kind of flares up, and it may only take one or two people to be the actual catalyst for that. I remember a couple of years ago there were some big problems out in Macquarie Fields and also in Redfern, and they were an example of some of those simmering tensions that were happening within the community, a lot of issues that hadn't been addressed, a lot of people that were feeling powerless, and when they actually got together, the convergence effect happened and it really became, you know, something quite difficult for everyone.
Well, very similar, I guess, to the London riots that happened. Yep. Was it last year now? Mm. And you're kind of thinking, what's going on? Like, they don't. What's their cause? It didn't seem like they even had a cause, but it was the very nature of it. Well, if we kind of team up, we can actually cause chaos together, and we're stronger in numbers and things like that.
And you know, it was even, you know, I think we did something on the radio at that time as well, looking at some of the actual underlying issues that could have been happening there, and feeling powerless for long enough means, unfortunately, that I'll exercise whatever type of power I can, even if that's not a real helpful one for everyone else.
Mm.
The other thing that happens in a group is we actually develop a thing called groupthink, and that's where our allegiance to the group actually prevents us from dissenting. So, and that's an example, I guess, of what Aaron was talking about earlier with our own individual ethics, that if we've all become de-individuated in the group, and the group actually then starts to act in ways that we're not personally comfortable with, sometimes our allegiance to the group will actually prevent us from standing up against that, because we have kind of ingrained in us that it's a really difficult thing to actually stand up, to be outside, to say no, particularly in these group situations. And so pretty complex stuff actually occurs when we enter into any group.
Is that because we have such a wanting to belong to something?
Most definitely. We are, you know, inherently social beings, and we always understand ourselves in reference to others, and we do want to belong and to fit in as much as possible. And sometimes that will actually mean that allows us to act in ways which may be, you know, not in accordance with our own values and alignments.
Is it, with this situation, I'm trying to just grasp this a bit more, is it possible that when we're in these groups as such, there doesn't necessarily have to be a leader? Or is there somewhere in that, this super brain, or I don't know, is there someone in there that sort of can manipulate this or trigger this to happen?
So there's a couple of ways of looking at this. And so one of them is that there doesn't actually have to be a leader, but the group has it, starts to develop its own intelligence and leadership.
Uh-huh.
But then there is also that idea of convergence, is that one or two people can actually, the actions of one or two people can act as the catalyst for a much larger, you know, formation of some existing difficulties. And that's often what we see in situations where a group of people have gotten together quite peacefully to voice their concern about something that's occurred, and then one or two people, and it need literally for a group of 100, 200, 300 people may only need to be one or two people, and their actions, and in particular the response, particularly of the other party that's often involved, can actually then, you know, change that whole dynamic. It's really, really interesting, because even in the footage that we saw over the weekend, we saw one or two people, you know, acting out, and we saw a lot of that footage that was replayed loads and loads and loads. But also, while that was occurring, you actually saw more people, and they're probably elders from the community, actually trying to stop that.
Yes.
And that's another point that I think is quite easily overlooked when events like this have been covered, that the negative behaviour is often covered a lot more than any positive ones, or the actual people in the community that are trying to stop this from occurring.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.